This episode is brought to you by Oracle. AI may be important, but it needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/enhance.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, January 23rd. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, Amazon's Prime Video service will soon include ads. What will it take for Amazon to compete with entertainment companies like Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery and keep users engaged? We'll hear from WSJ reporter Patrick Coffey. And then, for years, software company Palantir has been a big recipient of U.S. government contracts, which have helped make it a $36 billion company. But more recently, the revenue growth of those contracts has slowed as the government looks to some of Palantir's competitors. What does that mean for the company's bottom line and its future prospects? WSJ reporter Heather Somerville joins us to discuss. But first, Amazon is planning to roll out ads on its Prime Video service later this month. It's joining the ranks of other video streaming services like Netflix that have recently rolled out ad-based tiers. But Amazon's big advantage is the data it's collected about millions of customers for years. That could make Amazon's ads more appealing for advertisers. Here to tell us more is WSJ reporter Patrick Coffey. So Amazon Prime Video is not the first streamer to have an ad-based tier. What makes their plan different?
Well, one key point is that all Amazon Prime subscribers will be signed up for the ad-supported version of Prime Video by default. If you want to go ad-free, you have to pay $2.99 per month more. That's very different than what Netflix and Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery have all done.
How much revenue is Amazon expecting that this will make for the company?
According to recent research from Morgan Stanley and Bank of America, they estimate that it's going to be around $5 billion in revenue annually based on both ad sales and that added surcharge, depending on how many members decide to pay to go ad-free.
Patrick, what are some things that the company has done before that could show us how this might go?
Thursday Night Football is really the best indicator of how well this is going to perform. And they have had growth in viewership, 24% year over year from the first season to the second. But key really is they need to ensure that they keep adding high quality content that regularly attracts millions and millions of viewers, especially in the categories that are going to be most attractive to advertisers. Buyers also indicate to me that Amazon's going to need to make more acquisitions or sign more deals. We just heard last week, for example, that they invested in a regional sports programmer, and the Journal has previously reported that they're trying to lock down a deal to broadcast NBA games in addition to NFL games.
What kinds of challenges might Amazon Prime Video face as it rolls out ads?
Key challenge for them is that the other streaming companies just have better established relationships with the biggest advertisers, which still buy primarily on broadcast TV, in addition to the ad agencies that manage their budgets. And Amazon has been working on this. They've been showing up at big industry events that they skipped in the past. As one buyer told me, they're pitching with spreadsheets and data when for decades, the model has been wining and dining advertising executives and agency executives. But companies like Disney, companies like Warner Brothers, have an advantage because they've been in the TV game for so long, and they just know how this works.
Zooming out a little, what will it take for Prime Video ads to succeed?
It's really about quality content and proving to advertisers that their spend is worth it and that it's not a risk for them. And that is one of the big challenges for Amazon, because there are a couple of categories of advertisers that might be hesitant, namely those that don't sell products on Amazon, like car companies or insurance companies. There's also a risk for those in consumer goods categories like clothing and beauty products, because if they don't already sell on Amazon, there would be pressure for them to do so. And that would then force them to compete with other brands that sell cheaper versions of the same stuff, including Amazon's own in-house brand. General consensus is that Amazon might start a little behind in this race and move a little slowly as they come out of the gate. But ultimately, they're likely to win this battle in the same way that they came to dominate book sales and delivery, because they just have so much information about so many people.
That was our reporter, Patrick Coffey. Coming up, U.S. government agencies have leaned on software companies like Palantir to gather and analyze data. So why has revenue growth for Palantir slowed down recently? We'll find out next, after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Oracle. AI may be important, but it needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/enhance.
Since its founding in 2003, software company Palantir Technologies has built a $36 billion company. That's in part due to the company's longstanding relationship with the U.S. government, which is its biggest client. But more recently, government agencies such as the Defense Department have started to look at some of Palantir's competitors, and it's affecting the company's revenue growth. WSJ reporter Heather Somerville joins us now with more. Heather, how did Palantir's relationship with the U.S. government start?
Palantir really started making its way into the U.S. government through a relationship with the CIA, where it sold its software to the CIA initially for help detecting roadside bombs in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And from there, it continues to sell software to many parts of the U.S. government and also developed a commercial branch. So it sells its software to other large businesses.
What exactly does Palantir do for government agencies?
So basically, as government agencies get more and more data and they need to use the data to make decisions, they've leaned on companies like Palantir to help them do that. So Palantir now works well beyond the intelligence community, selling its product to the Food and Drug Administration, immigration enforcement, all sorts of parts of the DOD, the Justice Department, the list goes on. And for instance, in the Food and Drug Administration, they needed to make decisions about the effect of opioids and what opioids are doing to the population and managing that. And they had a large amount of data. And for a time, Palantir was part of the solution to help them see what sort of data they have and make decisions based on that. Now, in that particular example, the Food and Drug Administration did replace Palantir with another product. And that's indicative of some of the trend that's happening across government agencies as they're switching out Palantir for other options.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that. How has Palantir's relationship with government, which has been so strong since the company's beginning, changed recently?
Palantir's relationship with the government, and particularly with the DOD, has evolved as these agencies are moving towards using multiple vendors for a specific project. And they want to encourage competition in industry. They want to get a cheaper product. They want to have more flexibility. But that hasn't worked in Palantir's favor. There's other issues that have come up in my discussion with sources around government use of Palantir that has prompted, in some instances, the government to trade out Palantir for another option. One of those issues is data ownership and the flexibility with data, particularly with really sensitive data, as you would expect with the military. There's some consternation around how much control Palantir has over the data that belongs to the military. And Army officials have been very clear recently that they want tech vendors who let the Army have total control over their data. And that hasn't been the case with Palantir, according to my sources inside the DOD. Now, Palantir disagrees with this. Palantir says, we don't own the data. We don't try to monetize the data. That's not what we do.
So what has Palantir said about its slowed business with the U.S. government?
Palantir's argument is that doing business with the U.S. government is a very lumpy and difficult business because you're dependent on Congress passing budgets and approving funding. And as we all know, that's extremely difficult and not necessarily a reflection of Palantir, but of the U.S. government budget cycle.
How is this impacting Palantir's revenue?
What we know is Palantir's growth with U.S. government business has slowed. In 2023, it was around 10%. That's compared to 2022, it was well over 20%. So you can see that steady decline. You can see this slowdown in the reflection of their overall revenue growth. The U.S. government is their biggest single customer. We saw 17% revenue growth last quarter from Palantir, and that compares to 52% growth during the same quarter in 2020.
What does all of this mean for the company's long-term prospects?
Palantir says there are a couple of things driving its growth. One, it refers to this new AI product, where Palantir says it can enable clients like the U.S. military to utilize AI, like a ChatGPT, and Palantir's software to make decisions about, for instance, battlefield management, military tactics, pulling all this data in from all sorts of parts of the U.S. military. Palantir can also look to foreign governments and selling bigger contracts to companies like oil and gas companies and other technology companies.
That was our reporter, Heather Somerville. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsap. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.